Hello, everyone. Welcome to Toonami Therapy. On April 25th of 2024, I'm Michael.
I'm Tommy.
And this is our podcast where we talk about anime and other things we've been watching, including some series that are on Toonami. So, we have exciting news. So we find out that we're going to be getting, after Ninja Kamui is over, we'll get the exciting new series of 2 weeks of marathons of Ninja Kamui. So, yeah, I don't know what we'll be doing for those weeks, but we'll find something. We'll see what's coming after that. The fact that they're actually doing 2 weeks like this honestly makes me wonder if they might be just trying to stall for something.
Yeah, so they can wait until a new show has its dub ready, so that then they can put it on.
Yes,
but yeah, I just don't understand why else they would do a 2 week marathon, because like you said, Memorial Day is usually a marathon too, so that's like three marathons in a matter of 6 or 7 weeks.
Yes. The theory, I mentioned it to you, but I'll say it on the podcast. I think it's probably My Hero Academia. The season is premiering soon. Well, technically it's already premiered. It's just the first four episodes are just all recap episodes. So the season proper starts, I think, in a week or two. So maybe this is just, and of course the dub will be a few weeks behind. Toonami will probably, if they get it, will probably be some weeks behind that as well. So my theory is that they're probably doing this to try to stall for that. Maybe they'll actually air all four of those recap episodes as an additional way to stall.
Yeah. Another way of padding.
So that is my guess, but we'll see. I mean, I remember when I spent a bunch of time trying to guess what the Licorice Recoil replacement would be, and then it was just a second One Piece episode. Okay. Well, hopefully the replacement will not be a third One Piece episode. Okay. Anyway, so we've gone through that. Let's talk the Toonami show. So, we've got Ninja Kamui episode 11. So, Higan and the other guy fight, and then Higan wins. All right, we got that done. Mike and the hacker guy are trying to get the data out of the thing so they can make it public. Okay, we got that. And the bad guys have some infighting, it looks like. Although, I'm not really, outside of the fact that they sometimes sit around a table and act like the Legion of Doom, I can't really tell you the specifics of the villains. So I don't know exactly how all that worked out. But they're apparently turning against each other, the bad guys. And that's basically the episode.
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty dull episode, because the problem with this show is that it never really developed any of these characters, and it's been so confusing for so long, and now it's just like, okay, lots of action, and then it's, you know, supposed to make you like the accent to it, but I don't know. It's just I don't really care about it. And in fact, this week I was so disgusted by it that I lowered my rating for it from a 3 down to a 2. So yeah, this isn't disastrous like Tokyo Ghoul, but it's just, there's nothing enjoyable about this show. It's just that they never really none of the characters really connected with me. So now I feel like I don't really care what happens, you know?
I think there was an attempt at some characterization in this episode. We got a bunch of, you know, flashback stuff, although as you often, that's the kind of case where I'm like, you know, maybe we could have had that a little earlier, but or done a little better. But I just thought it was okay. Tokyo Ghoul. You know, it's weird. I read, so I watched the whole anime, the whole, both of the series, the Tokyo Ghoul and Tokyo Ghoul. What was its name? Like Square Root of A. Something. Yeah. So I watched those and although for the record, in Tokyo Ghoul Square Root of A, it like diverges considerably from the manga. I know that the last episode is all about characters mourning the death of a character who didn't die in the manga. Anyway, I'll just mention that because I didn't really like it that much, but I did go and read the manga, and I don't know, even though it's the same thing basically up until this blow-off point, I thought it worked better there. I don't know if maybe the pacing was better, but I did feel that was better. The weird thing is that, as I understand it, so there's a sequel manga to Tokyo Ghoul called Tokyo Ghoul Re, and they did an anime adaptation of that. But as I understand, they didn't adapt the things. So how do I explain it? Basically, okay, I know the right way to put it. Okay, you know Full Metal Alchemist and Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood. Full Metal Alchemist right. Brotherhood was a more direct adaption of the manga. The original right. anime at a certain point split off and did its own thing. So yeah. It kind of would be like if, because they didn't adapt the sort of midpoints, they just skipped to Tokyo Ghoul Re, it would have been sort of like if you had from my understanding, I could be wrong, it's as if you had watched the original Full Metal Alchemist series, then just cut in midway into Brotherhood, past a bunch of different things that had already happened differently.
Yeah, that is my number one least favorite anime of all time, Tokyo Ghoul.
Okay. So, anyway.
This isn't much better.
I don't think criticizing Tokyo Ghoul is that much of a hot take, especially the anime. Especially the anime, because a lot of people didn't really like it as an adaptation. All I know is that when I read the manga, I was more interested in it, although admittedly not interested enough to stay with it, but some of the stuff that I didn't like in the anime, I feel were done better in the manga. All right. Anyway, back to Toonami stuff. So, yeah, we've gotten through Ninja Kaori. Then we go into, well, Tokyo Ghoul is about, well, they're called ghouls and not zombies. But in Night of the Living Dead, the zombies originally were called ghouls. So these ghouls became zombies, which brings us to Zom 100. Pretty good transition,
works,
right?
Works, yeah.
Okay, so we have Zom 100, Episode 4. So basically, they end up encountering this old guy and several women and they all end up, you know, having to hide from the zombies and none of them are featured in the theme song. So as you might have guessed, they all get turned into zombies or die. So they manage to defeat them and get away, and that's basically our episode.
Yeah. I gotta be honest, at least I understand what's going on in this show rather than in Ninja Kamui. And, you know, I've kind of begrudgingly accepted the fact that it's never going to make sense. Problem is, it's just not funny enough. Like, it should be funnier. And because I know they're going for some dark humor, but they're not succeeding with it, and I just feel like I'm not laughing, even though that's pretty much what the goal of the show is to do. And since I'm not laughing, then it's kind of, it's disappointing. So I'm not saying it's as bad as Ninja Kamui, but it's not connecting with me.
Yeah, to a certain extent, I agree. I feel that the series, you know, we're still early on. There's a bunch of stuff that could happen, but it did just kind of feel, I don't know, I just kind of felt a matter of, okay, we encounter these characters. Okay, they all die. And yeah. That's kind of all that really happened. And I was kind of left wondering, so what did we really get from this episode? I guess we got a little more information about them, you know, coming up with things for the list of things they want to do and such. But other than that, it was just, okay, here's some new characters. Well, they all die. I mean,
yeah.
I wasn't exactly surprised they died because, again, mm-hmm. not, that's the thing about some shows. Are they in the theme song? Okay, they probably die.
that's a good rule of thumb.
I was in the previous episode, I was fooled into thinking a character would die because I thought they weren't in the theme song, but they were. They just had a different hair color in the theme song, so I missed them. But this one, nope, they're not there, so they all die. So, let me just hang on. I need to actually double check something. This is, I'm just seeing. Okay, yeah, they're apparently, they're skipping over it, but apparently, after this episode, in original Japan, they had a recap episode.
Oh, wow.
5 episodes in, recap episode. But
so are we going to get that? Are we going to get that on Toonami?
No, it doesn't look like it. I'm looking at the list of episodes and air dates, and it says, and the one airing this weekend will be the next one, not the recap.
Okay.
The Zom 100, when it originally aired in Japan, it ran into some, like, apparently some big production difficulties, and there were a bunch of, pauses and hiatuses and such. Yeah. For example, like here, I'm going to list them. So we had episode 4. Then the next week we had a recap episode, and then the week after that we had the next episode. Okay, fine. 2 weeks after that we had another episode. Then the week after that another episode. Then 2 weeks again we got the next episode. No break for the next one. We got one the next week, and then 3 months afterward, we got the remaining 3 episodes.
Oh, wow.
So yes, if you're watching it on Toonami, then again, with the marathons we're getting, you'll have to be waiting also.
Yeah, so it's not much different.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. All right, so we got One Piece episodes 662 and 663. All right, so basically we find out, yeah, so Law is alive. Doflamingo basically blames him for the incorrect information about him stepping down. The other characters, you know, try to save Law, but end up getting basically stopped by the Marines. We also, I'm just trying to remember some of these things.
Luffy's brother.
Yeah. Oh, now, well, no, it wasn't his brother. Now I'm getting it. For some reason, I was only remembering stuff from the first episode. Offhand. So basically we have that. We apparently are going to have Big Mom. She was kind of teased at the end of the Fishman Island arc, or at least her crew's showing up. Luffy ends up meeting someone who wants to get the flame fruit, and it's a character who I think showed up like quite briefly, if I remember correctly, but he's apparently super important to Luffy's backstory. So Luffy's like, yeah, okay, you can have the flame fruit. And then that's all great. And yeah, everyone else gets ready to do the assault on the Smile Factory thing, whenever that will actually happen. There's been a whole lot of setup for that.
Yeah, so who is this person? Like, you can give it away because you can spoil it for me.
Okay.
Who is this person?
All right, if I remember correctly about him, because it's sort of weird, he was basically this person who was sort of kind of retconned into being really important to Luffy's backstory. It wasn't here where it was right. It was earlier, but basically it was like, yeah, Luffy, he spent a whole bunch of time with he and Ace was his brother, went, or wait, was Ace his biological brother or was he adopted brother? I can't remember. It's been so long. Anyway, they spent a whole bunch of time together when they were kids and they were really important, but Luffy thought this character died. But believe me, he was really important to Luffy's backstory, even though he wasn't mentioned until something like 600 chapters into the series. Anyway, Luffy thought he was dead, but then he finds out, oh no, he's actually alive, and he's the one who's going to get the flame fruit, because I'm going to be honest, he legitimately, what was his name again? I can't remember, but I it kind of feels like, because Ace, who is Luffy's brother, who had the flame fruit, he died. He was actually like one of the very first characters to actually die in One Piece, although it was pretty far in. And so then it kind of almost felt like the author was saying, oh, I shouldn't have killed him. Okay, I'm going to have this character say, hey, he was super important to Luffy's past, just like Ace was. And he's going to show up and he's going to get the flame fruit. So he'll have the same backstory with Luffy. It'll also have the flame fruit. So there, Ace is back. Ha! It kind of feels like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. What was his name? I feel so dumb. I can't remember. Let me look it up quick. Let's see. He had the flame fruit, and it was. Ah, Sabo, that was his name. I can't believe I forgot that. But yeah, so that's him. I can't remember. Did we see his face or was it kept from us?
I didn't see his face.
So. Okay. Because I was remembering at least it initially was, but I can't remember if we actually saw him or not. But yes, that was basically that. When was his first? I'm just trying to check. Oh, yes. So this character, he. Wow, when I said 600, I just kind of threw that out. No, he first shows up in chapter 583. I was close.
You were close, yeah. 583, wow.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but he's really important to Luffy. But
yes.
He only appeared in episode 583.
Okay. No, chapter 583.
Chapter.
In episodes, he was in episode 494.
Okay.
We basically get this flashback about Luffy and Ace, and then they meet Sabo, and then, you know, it's all about how they're important. It really feels very much like he was just retconned into being important. Remember when, oh, again, it's been so long. What was, if you said his name, I'd recognize it, but the guy in that Bleach, the one before the really lengthy hiatus in the anime, it was I don't want to say it because I feel like I'm going to get it.
Hoshin?
No, not Hoshin. The one who was like, it was like the charge of like execution was the name of the organization.
Jin Ichimaru, is that it?
No, that was a guy who worked for Aizen, except then he betrayed Aizen, but then he got beaten anyway. So,
yeah,
and then he died. So you're like, oh, well, okay, not really sure what the point of that was. I'm sorry, I'm going crazy trying to remember. It started with like a T, I feel like a Tsu. I'm just gonna Check. Well, anyway, basically the character who has the ability to, if he stabs you with his sword, he's able to insert himself into your past retroactively. So when he hits so he's able to hit Ichigo's friends. So they all think, yeah, don't you remember him? He was with us during that mission to Soul Society and helped us fight Aizen.
I don't remember that at all. That must have happened. That must have happened during one of those Fullbringer arcs or something.
Yeah, it was a Fullbringer. That was it.
Yeah. Whenever I stopped paying attention. Actually, no, it wasn't that I stopped paying attention. It was that I, didn't have cable or something. Ooh. But, yeah.
Tsukishima, that was his name.
Okay.
And that was his power. When he uses it on you, he basically makes you... to some extent, changes reality. Because I remember, because he slashes one of Byakuya's, petals from Senbon Sakura, he then inserts himself into Byakuya's past so that they've been long-time training partners, so he knows all of Byakuya's attacks.
Oh, wow. So that's basically what this One Piece guy has done.
it's more like the author doing it, but it does kind of feel like you're just saying, yes, he was in the past all along. Okay. Anyway, that's all of our stuff about that. That's my recap and discussion of One Piece. I don't really have too much else to say about it. Do you have anything?
Not really. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So we're done with. Let me just get this ready. Yes, that's all the Toonami stuff. So we get Shangri-La Frontier episode 21. We're past the Toonami stuff now. Okay, so our characters basically take stock of the things they got from the fight, and Sunraku's all excited about the armor he got, but it turns out you can't actually use it unless you have this reactor engine thing that they need to get fixed, which they can't do it yet because the guy who could possibly fix it wasn't there. Anyway, let's see. We also... So we get that there was the other... Right, so I remember. Sunraku was trying to get one of the rabbit NPCs to basically get the level of ancient craftsman so that it could fit, so that she could fix the reactor thing so they could get the weapon stuff they got. Also, we spend a surprisingly amount of time with Arthur Pencilgon explaining a bunch of loopholes that she used just to be able to keep this item after losing all her stuff. She's like, yeah, okay, say if I do, I gave it to you, so it's okay. But normally that would be against the rules, but because it was actually from this other place when I gave it to you, it doesn't, so I can take it back. And I'm just like, okay, that was the scene was kind of amusing, but why did we have to explain all that?
Yeah.
And
what was the thing about them? The three of them did rock, paper, scissors over picking who was going to be the leader of their clan or whatever.
Yes. Oh, that was it. I completely forgot to mention. Yeah. The three do decide to make a clan, and then they end, except no one wants to be the leader, so they do rock, paper, scissors to decide, and Pencilgon ends up stuck with it.
Yeah, that was something I was very confused about, because I'm like, wait, didn't Pencilgon, why was C the leader of the clan after C lost the rock, paper, scissors? I was confused by that. I was like, wouldn't it have been the winner who got to be the leader of the clan?
Yeah, apparently no one actually wanted to be the leader.
Okay, that doesn't make sense, but I guess that's what happens. So
well, I guess it's because they didn't want the extra responsibilities, because they immediately start saying, okay, now you need to come up with a name for the clan. And they end up with Wolfgang, which, for the record, I'm pretty sure they actually use like the Japanese word for it. So I don't think it's like supposed to be some sort of reference to, like, you know, Wolfgang Mozart. That was Mozart's first name, right? Yeah, Wolfgang Mozart.
Okay. Yeah, I thought it was an amusing episode. Mm-hmm. It was entertaining. It was funny. And I especially like the funny part whenever that guy comes into the bar and he's like, hey, are these Sunraku and Pentagon? Have you seen them? And they bolt out of there. And then he's trying to chase them down. And that was really funny, too. So I have to say, this was a very good episode of the show, even though you could argue that not much really happened. But I still enjoyed it.
I mean, it was funny and entertaining, even if not much necessarily happened. We got that. Also, we did finally see Katsuo in real life. And it's weird because I was thinking, because, you know, he's a guy in real life but plays a female character. And I thought, okay, so the reason the voice sounds kind of feminine is, I don't know, maybe they're using modulator. Nope, they sound exactly the same in real life. So yeah. We got that. I mean, it's not like a voice a guy can't have. It just sounded much more female than I would have thought. So anyway, we get that. But yeah, I guess like the big thing is, yes, they do form a guild, or I can't remember if that was the name, guild, gang, group, whatever it was. That's what we get.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So yeah, we had some fun jokes and some entertaining interactions. Yeah. These three are just fun. Their interactions are fun. The show is more fun when it's the three of them interacting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then we got my teen romantic comedy snafu episode 30. Yes. Episode 30.
Do you want me to do this one?
Sure.
Okay. So, we get news that the prom is in trouble, and it's Yukino's mother who is fighting against it, because this is pretty much the very same thing that happened in real life to my school, where we tried to have a prom, and then people on the teachers ended up trying to kill it and then make people get in big trouble if they would go to it. So I sympathize with the characters here, because even though I wouldn't have gone to it, I know exactly what this is like. And so we get all that, and then Yui tries to help the main character, Hachiman, come up with a gift for his sister. And then we get a scene where Yukino's sister, who I'm just going to call Alexia, because she's got the same voice actress and the same attitude. So she kind of... she kind of bullies Hachiman, and he blurts out that Yukino have a love triangle, and she laughs over that and then says, no, they're too codependent, which is like, okay, well, what's so bad about that? It's good to have friends, you know? But then Yui gets really depressed because she basically figures out that Hachiman must be in love with Yukino. That's what I took away from it. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's kind of what I thought it was implying. And we still have to find out what Hachiman's going to make for his sister. But that is where it leaves off.
Yes, I think that's what it was trying to imply, but it did that thing the show does a bunch of times where characters say things, but they don't actually say exact. They you know, like those what people make fun of when there's like the villain groups and they're, you know, say things like, yes, our plan will come to fruition. We just need that. You know, where they describe it, but say it in really non-committal terms. You'd see that sometimes in this show, and that's kind of what I was thinking was going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, I really liked this episode. I felt like this was yet again, well, not really, but it's not late in the season, like the last two seasons, which progressively got better. This isn't all that much into the season, but it felt a lot better than some of the previous episodes. So, yeah, I enjoyed this one.
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of a mixed bag for me because we do, once again, we are getting a bit more focused on the main characters and such. At the same time, it does feel a little weird that now we're suddenly saying, yes, okay, love triangle, all drama, all this stuff that we, you know, you think you would have gotten earlier considering the title, but we're getting into it now. But then it just feels a little weird that we're saying, okay, what's the big conflict? It's about whether they're going to have a prom or not. And admittedly, the fact I never cared at all about prom when I was in high school and never went to it, maybe that's why I don't care much about it. So, it was kind of middle of the road for me. All right, so, well, we finished with Full Metal Panic Fumofu. Now we go on to the, depending on how you counted, either the second or the third season. And so we've got Full Metal Panic, the second raid, episode 1.
Yeah, so basically this episode is just a big battle between Sosuke and the Mithril crew and their mechas against this evil guy and his team of bad guys. And that's pretty much all this episode is. And Kaname appears for maybe 30 seconds max just to yell at Sosuke for not having his homework and his notes or something. She literally is on screen for less than 30 seconds of this episode. So, if you're ready for mecha fights and that kind of stuff, then this is for you. If you like what we had in Fumofu, this is not going to be for you. And and if you would like, I don't know. I don't want to spoil it. But I don't know. I didn't enjoy this episode. Maybe it's because I was expecting a really funny scene that must occur in episode 2. And I was waiting for this funny scene to occur. And I was like, okay, it's coming, it's coming, it's coming. It never happened. And so I'm like, okay, maybe. Because whenever I originally watched this, so I watched the first 3 episodes at an anime con. I watched them in Japanese, and it was really, there's this one really amusing scene, and it wasn't as funny in the English dub as it was in the Japanese. So you probably won't get the full effect of it. But you'll know it when you see it. So it's something a bad guy sings. So that is to look forward to in either episode 2 or 3. It comes in one of those 2 episodes. But as for this one, I'm not too into it.
Okay. Yeah. By the way, if anyone can hear, I it happened before, but I'll mention again. If you can hear all that water behind me, sorry about that. It's just pipes stuff. So anyway, in case anyone was wondering what that was. So let's see what I was going to say. Yeah, I kind of agree. I was kind of surprised that after... I know I'm not expecting this to be like Fumofu, but man, there was so little Kaname here, as you said.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And not really much of the jokes either, other than Sosuke saying, well, I have a homework assignment to turn in, so I can't die. So that was good. You know, although I did notice, because this was a thing in the Fumofu also, the joke of how he... you know, needs to borrow her notes, but then has, like, forgets to bring it back or return it. I'm just thinking, when this took place, didn't they have photocopy machines? Couldn't they have just done it, they copied them that way? So, anyway, so there's that. Now, I had a question, because I was trying to figure this out. I noticed that this is on Crunchyroll. Full Metal Panic, the second raid, and none of the other Full Metal Panic series do this. It's rated as a mature series. Do you have any idea? You've seen it before. Do you know why that is?
I'm assuming it's just the violence. I don't remember anything sexual that would cause it to be that. So I'm guessing it's just because it's very violent.
You had the
guy getting shot in the first episode, so maybe it is the violence, but I'm not sure.
I don't think it can be the violence, because I looked at some other series like, you know, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. It's not rated mature. Chainsaw Man isn't rated mature. Attack on Titan isn't rated mature. Solo Leveling, which you've never seen, but it's pretty violent, isn't rated mature. So none of those, it doesn't seem like just violence does it. All the series I can think of that are like rated mature have some sort of sexual thing to it. So I was just trying to figure out why that was here, because it wasn't that way for any of the other Full Metal Panic series. So I don't know exactly. I was just trying to figure out why that's the case.
Well, we'll find out, I guess.
Yeah, the original Full Metal Panic, that's rated like 14, even. Like those other series I mentioned, the more violent ones, those are all 16 on Crunchyroll. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until just now I even realized they gave age numbers on Crunchyroll. I just happened to see it and I'm like, oh wow, they actually do that. Huh. Anyway, so yeah, it was just very weird to suddenly see Full Metal Panic of all things. Because I listed as mature. So maybe there's something in it you're forgetting about, or maybe it was just badly rated. I guess at the end of this season, if I'm left wondering, okay, why did you rate it like that? Then I'm going to ask it. I mean, I guess there was some like nudity in the theme song, but that was the case in the first season also. So it really wasn't.
I'm sure there's some sexual stuff in this, but I don't remember exactly what it is. So maybe you have to remember, I haven't seen this in like 12 years. So, I can't remember exactly. I mean, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. It just felt to I was like suddenly wondering, wait, were the previous ones rated this? And no, not the others weren't there. So it's kind of weird. I don't know if we at the end of this are wondering why is this mature? Maybe I'll ask them and say, why is this mature? maybe there's just one particular scene that does it, because I assume they probably just do it by season. You know, if one episode is regarded as mature, then they just slap the whole thing with it. But this first episode, like, there's some violence, but again, I've seen worse. Like JoJo is worse when it comes to violence. Although sometimes it's not really just like the level of violence, but kind of the focus. Like on JoJo, someone getting stabbed in their eye with a pen is for some reason often like I'm like more yee in relation to that than like someone I don't know like you know getting like actually losing a limb sometimes. I guess just because there's so much more focus on it. Okay, I'm sorry to any listeners who probably didn't want to hear about that. Okay. All right, so we'll find out. In the meantime, we'll move on. We got Dark Gathering, Episode 8. And so in this episode, we do get introduced to a new character whose name is... What was her name? Again, that's her, I Kamio. So she's a new student for them, but it turns out that she's, of course, having issues with spirits also. They managed to get rid of one, but then it turns out the other one that's actually after her was a different one because, of course, that's the way Come to think of it, how many times have they gotten who they thought was the bad spirit, but it turned out there was another one that they missed? Is this like the third time?
It seems like it.
Yeah. Anyway, turns out it was actually her brother, and apparently her brother was doing that because he was trying to kill her to prevent her from being forced to, I think... What was it? Was she going to be like forced to marry some sort of weird god or something? That was it.
They just say a god.
So anyway, because she'll have to do that and then die as a result of that. So basically we find all that information about, but then they end up having to deal with a bunch more evil spirits that are coming to attack them, which is where the episode ends. I think this is our first cliffhanger actually.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen a series where there's a character named I with stars in her eyes, but maybe there's one out there. I'm not sure. So this episode, it wasn't bad. It had some funny moments and stuff. Ultimately, I don't think it's going to make my top three for the week, but I didn't think it was all that bad. It wasn't as good as, say, last week's, but it's all right.
You beat me to the Oshinoko reference. It was even more than I thought. I was going to make a joke just on the stars in the eyes, but then I'm like, wait, no, they do have the same name.
Yeah.
Well, it's actually, let me just double check. Did this manga come out before or after? This series actually predates Oshinoko by about a year. So maybe, let me think. I don't know what chapter this would have been in. I think this would have probably been, if we assume each chapter is one episode, because this was a monthly series originally, that would put this at probably around chapter 8, and it was monthly, so I'm just doing some calculations here. Yeah, it's almost certainly a total coincidence, because I know that these... They have to like get anime manga stuff ready pretty well ahead of before they're actually published. Oh,
right.
Yeah. So I'm going to guess it's just a complete coincidence. Okay. So anyway, that was our episode of Dark Gathering. I don't have much else to really say about that. All right, did you want to talk about, because we did watch the Spy Family movie, do you want to talk about that before or after giving the top threes?
We'll give the top three first.
Okay.
Mine, third place, I have to give it the One Piece just because I think the whole two episodes equal one kind of thing, it kind of, I don't know. I might kind of like this two episodes of One Piece because it actually equals, you know, like one not so bad episode, even with the padding. Second place, Shangri-La Frontier. And my favorite show of the week was Snafu.
Okay. For me, well, nothing from Toonami managed to make it, but it would be Snafu for third, Dark Gathering in second, and Shangri-La Frontier winning.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there's that. All right, so we both ended up watching that new Spy Family movie, Spy Family Code White. I guess we'll maybe talk about it a little. I like to say this could be a review, but unfortunately, by the time this podcast goes up, it'll probably be out of theaters.
Yeah.
I'm sure it'll be put on Crunchyroll eventually, though.
Mm-hmm.
The funny thing was that I was thinking this would be something that we could watch later on when it's on Crunchyroll. And then you emailed me and say, by the way, I saw the movie. It was pretty good. I'm like, okay, I guess I'll see it then.
Yeah, so basically the movie, you know, I'm assuming it's, I don't know if you call it filler or what, but it's one of the classic movies where, you know, nothing that happens in the movie affects the overall storyline all that much.
Mm-hmm. It's a movie original. This was not based on anything in the manga.
Yeah. So, I thought it was really funny and stuff. I also thought it really, really stretched believability whenever it came to your being able to avoid hundreds of gunshots in rapid succession. Like in this movie, no one was able to land a shot with any guns. Like guns were pretty much completely useless,
mm-hmm.
and that was a theme throughout the whole movie to the point where it's just like I was just like I give up. Whenever Yor is like on the side of a plane, dodging hundreds of shots at a time, I'm like, okay, this is just what's going to happen. So yeah, it was really funny. It was Spy Family at its best. This show is really strong whenever it focuses on its main characters. Yeah, even the dog, you know, like whenever it focuses on those minor characters, it isn't that funny. But when this movie made sure to keep its focus mainly on the three main characters, and it did a pretty good job. So I really enjoyed it. I gave it a 9 out of 10.
So I enjoyed it also. For in case anyone is wondering, though, I should mention, I think you can go into the film without really knowing much about Spy Family because all the most important stuff is told you by the narrator. You know, like Lloyd's a spy, Yor's an assassin, Anya's a telepath, all that stuff. It gives you all the important stuff. There's a few things that are a little confusing, like when Yuri, Yor's brother, shows up and he doesn't actually do anything in the movie. So I don't even know why he was included in it, because it just feels like that's just a character, because things aren't really explained too much about him. So we got at least a little about, what was her name? I can't believe I'm blanking on it. The female spy who's, you know, acts really cold but is actually totally in love with Lloyd.
Nightfall,
that was it. She at least had somewhat of a focus in it. But
yeah.
So at least she kind of had a bit of a point. So I kind of look, I don't want to say the first and second half. I don't know if it was the halfway point, but there definitely, to me, felt like there were two kind of parts to it. And the first half or so, I thought was really great. I was thinking, okay, this is, like, if this had just been cut up into individual episodes, I wouldn't, like, this would have felt completely like a normal episode of the show. It was a great imitation of the style. The writer, Spy Family, didn't write this movie. I think he did have some creative supervision, though, so he probably, you know, made things better. But the second part, when it becomes much more action-oriented, and as you say, guns are almost completely useless. The only thing a gun does is that it grazes Lloyd's mask and makes it slightly come off. That's the only thing a gun actually accomplishes in this entire movie, basically. There's, like, Lloyd's in a shootout and nothing, and like he somehow doesn't get shot with all these guys going after him. It is just so, it is honestly to the, if I was trying to parody the way things never hit someone, this is like, I'm not sure I would go as far as this movie did. It's like Chisato from Licorice Recoil couldn't have dodged all of this. So, So that was a bit of an issue. Yeah, a lot of things got kind of plausible. It's just a matter of, so how does Lloyd have perfect masks of these other characters? Just, does he just make them on the spot? Because they're very good masks.
Yeah.
That, I remember the first episode, he was able to apparently make a mask of one of the bad guys pretty quickly, but it wasn't a matter, even then, I assume he had more time than, I don't know, 15 seconds.
Yeah.
As was the case here. The last problem I had was the fact, at the end of all of this, the main villain of the series, like, he knows what they look like and such. And so he could like easily have, like, you know, at least tell, like, some people, you know, hey, keep an eye out for these sort of guys. And it would have presumably, you know, trickle down to the lower levels, and Yuri, who knows Lloyd and doesn't like him, would see, aha, this is looks just like Lloyd, and go after him as a result. So that was like the problem I had. If they had just had the bad guy like die, then okay, problem's all solved. But he apparently lives. So that just struck me as a bit weird. So the second half, like, there's still good stuff. There's some funny things. The action, implausible as it is pretty good. But I started having more problems with that, and that kind of knocked it down. I would give the movie an 8 instead of... I was originally thinking I'd give it a 9, but that kind of knocked it down to an 8 for me. But those sort of issues aside, there being more greater implausibilities in here than... I mean, the show already has some kind of implausibilities, but they're at least kind of they're still more plausible than the stuff in here.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to focus too much on the negatives. It's good. I just said I'd give it an 8 out of 10. If you like Spy Family, you should see the movie. There's good comedy. It's just good. It just, I think, due to it trying to be so much of an action thing later on, I think that kind of hurt some parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't think I have anything else to say about it. Basically, once again, if you like Spy Family, I think you'll like this movie. If you haven't seen any of Spy Family, it's not the worst introduction to it. It does explain all the important things to it. I actually happened to see it with my brother and my father. My father, I had actually gotten him to read the first volume of the manga, but that's all he kind of knew going in. But he could understand it. It pretty well. Like I said, all the important stuff is there. So, you know... Yeah, that's basically all I have to say. Yep. Anything else to say about it?
No, that's pretty much about it.
All right. So that's been our review of Spy Family Code White, which, as I noted, will probably be out of theaters by the time this is actually put up. So we'll see how
It actually finished in fifth in the United States box office charts this weekend.
Which is actually pretty, which is pretty good for a series that didn't have a wide release or anything.
Yeah.
Let me just actually check how far into it is my theater going. Okay. Well, it's not listed as going into next week at my theater, but they might not have been scheduled yet. It's going to be in at least some theaters over the next week. So I'll just say that if you want to go and check it out, go and look in maybe your theaters, they might actually have it if you want to see it and don't want to wait for it to hit streaming. Oh, one last thing. Yeah, there is a post-credit scene, but it really isn't enough to, I don't think, it's just like a brief joke, and I don't think it was really enough to justify sitting through it if you don't want to. Just look up online if you want to see what it was.
Yeah, I sat through it, and then I was like, that's it? And I was like, oh, come on. So, yeah, I was like, come on, you got to give me a little more than that, you know? Because I every time I'm at a movie, as soon as the credits come on, I immediately Google and see if it has a post-credit scene. And, you know, obviously if it does, then I'll stick it out. I mean, almost everyone else left. There was like only a few people who left, who stayed in for the whole thing. So, yeah. Okay. So, yeah, that was a very good movie. It proves that Spy Family is one of the best things that we have going for us. Sadly, you know, I wonder why Toonami never really got it. I mean, they even got Licorice Recoil, which seemed a little bit of a niche. So, I can't pronounce it.
Niche?
Yeah, that's the word. I'm surprised they never came around to that given its popularity, you know?
I think it's because, so one thing we've definitely seen is that series that are licensed by Crunchyroll, directly licensed, not just being on Crunchyroll, because there's stuff that's on Crunchyroll that other companies have licensed, it's just shown there. They're not very interested in showing series, in giving their things to Toonami, unless it's something that Toonami showed at some previous point. So, you know, My Hero Academia, they showed that, they've got that, and they may, for all we know, maybe they have some continuing contract about it. And same thing like Demon Slayer, I don't think there's anything that Crunchyroll has licensed that's made it on Toonami that wasn't there before. And that's Spy Family. Licorice Recoil, it was on Crunchyroll, but it was licensed by Aniplex. So I think that's the big thing. And Zom 100, that's on Crunchyroll. I think Netflix also has it. But that's Viz Media. They're the ones who have it licensed. That's the big thing. Also, because Spy Family is so popular, it would probably be really expensive. Even if they would. So, yeah, that's basically it. That's why I don't think, when I try to guess as to things we might have on it, I don't expect it to be anything that is like that Crunchyroll has licensed and that they haven't shown before.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, we've got all of that and... All right, anything else to say about anime?
Nope, not really.
Oh, okay.
I should mention it. Since I injured my foot this week, I was unable to watch anything extra, such as the Cowboy Bebop disaster and the other stuff I was watching, haven't been able to get to it, so that will have to wait another week. And yeah, that means it's going to take longer for me to get through this Cowboy Bebop thing. But
I mean,
I'm resolved to get through it, just so I can say I saw all 10 episodes, and just so I can give it a fair shake. I mean, maybe it does in the final 4 episodes improve. Maybe it does. I don't know, but we'll see.
You know, people often say that, but what series actually did manage to suddenly and abruptly manage to redeem themselves in just the last few episodes? I know that was your opinion on Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood. Are there any other series that did it?
I knew you'd figure that one out. I'm trying to think. There had to have been at least one, but yeah, that's very rare.
If I recall correctly, Code Geass, it had a lot of, like, it took a lot of wrong turns, especially in the second season, but the ending was actually pretty strong and managed to make up for some of it, at least from what I remember. But I have seen other people say that, so that could be an example of a series that managed to sort of, you know, have a good an ending that managed to help make up for some of the problems of what came before.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't really a case in which I would say that it made that. I feel also Death Note had a fairly good ending after, you know, a kind of lackluster second part. Although, this is why I always say there were two live-action movies that adapted the series, and literally what the second movie basically does, that concludes it, is they basically kind of skip past the second part more or less. They just, like, take the ending and transplant it to earlier in the series, and it works out better.
Yeah.
I
don't know. I've always thought that Death Note's quote-unquote bad arcs weren't actually all that bad, and they weren't as good as the best arcs. But I don't know. I guess if it's possible to say Death Note is underrated, that's what I would say about it. So I've never agreed that the Mellow Near thing was like such this big drop in quality, because I still remember that being a thrill ride all the way down to the final scene. So yeah, and that was the thing about Death Note, is that I didn't even like any of the characters, but
not even Matsuda.
But anyway, Cowboy Bebop, maybe it redeems itself. You know, you never know. Probably doesn't. So, but I will try to watch one for our next episode. So,
when, just looking at it this way, when you watch it, it means that our listeners won't have to.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Then that's the end of the anime discussion. We'll have a few extra things to say at the end, but right for now, we're done with the anime. So you can just switch off if you just want to hear us talk about anime. All right, so I guess if we want, we can talk a little more about The Amazing Race this season, which is...
Yeah, I gotta be honest. I totally checked out this season. Like, I sit in the room, but I just kind of play on my phone the whole time because it's so boring. This has been probably the worst season that... since I started watching. There's no one I like left in the show, and the tasks aren't even that interesting. And yeah, then you had that whole episode where all the people helped each other out, and it just defeated the purpose of the show. Mm-hmm. I was just kind of like, you know what, if you're going to do this, then forget about it. They shouldn't be allowed to help each other out. And I don't care about this alliance crap. You know, if you're going to help each other out, and that's how you're going to survive on the Amazing Race, you know, that's Survivor. That's not the Amazing Race. The race, it's supposed to be a race. It's not supposed to be, you know, basically a vote. Which, by the way, where has the, what's it called? The U-turn. Where's that been? Because I thought, you know, that was like a big thing. We desperately need a U-turn because one team is completely dominating this season. They desperately need to be U-turned because they are so far ahead of everyone else every episode that, almost every episode, that they desperately need a U-turn to make this worth watching. So, yeah, this has been a terrible season of Amazing Race, but it has been a great season of Survivor, so I will take that trade-off any day of the week. Finally, Survivor. Oh, it has been years since there's been a season I've liked, and this is a good season, so I'm very happy about that.
So I can't comment on Survivor, unfortunately, but in the Amazing Race, yeah, I got to say I'm not that super interested in this season either. I did like the firefighters, but they got they lost this time. Mm-hmm. And there's also the problem I've mentioned. You were the first one to notice this, but I'm sure I would have noticed it anyway. But everything here has been in Latin America. Every single episode. They've had with almost all of it, for that matter, being in South America. They went to Mexico. Okay, there's that. And then they just went to a bunch of South American countries. All of them, so it just keeps blurring. It's all in the same place. And I know, I want to be fair, obviously, they're different countries. They've got different cultures, all sorts of different things. I can't just say, oh, you know, they're all in South America. But the thing is, they're all in the South American countries. They're not even going, they're all Spanish speaking, every single one. It's not like, you know, in some other places, like other continents where there's a bunch of different languages and that makes things different. They haven't gone to Brazil. Brazil doesn't speak Spanish. Maybe they couldn't go for some reason. I have to think that maybe that the fact they just keep going South America maybe means it was some sort of like requirement or problem because of COVID, which I think was still sort of around back when this was recorded, because this is actually from before the previous season. But everything is just there. And next episode, they're going to Barbados, at least. So I'm like, okay, it's still in North or South America, but at least it's not a Spanish-speaking country.
Yeah.
So that's the level of variation we're getting. Still same continent. Well, I guess North and South America are separate continents, so this is North. But you know what I mean. They haven't gone to, like, Europe or Asia or Africa or any of those, and it just makes everything feel so samey.
Yeah.
Although I will say it was interesting to me to find out that Montevideo, the capital of Uruguay, has 40% of the population. And I was like, oh, wow, that's a lot. Mm-hmm. I learned that, and that was actually a pretty interesting factoid. I did not know it was that clustered there. But yeah, we'll see. Maybe things will be more interesting when we see the next episode. Except if you are a little tired of all the Spanish, they're going to be going to the Dominican Republic after this one. So So we know that much. Yeah, they're going to Barbados, then the Dominican Republic. And, oh, wow, I'm looking at this. So they're going to be there for a while, and then they're going to go back to the United States in that final leg? So, yeah, except for Barbados, every country they visited has been Spanish-speaking.
Yeah.
So I guess there you go. That's why you should learn Spanish, because you might go on the Amazing Race in a season where everything is in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, yeah, I know I spent the whole time just talking about it being the same language and continents. It's just because it's the same every time, and even though they're different countries and they do have different cultures and all those sorts of things, it just makes it seem so samey. It would be like if they only went to the English-speaking countries, really.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, I don't have anything else to say about that then. Maybe, we'll see. Maybe the Amazing Race in those last few episodes will manage to pull it off and make itself really good at the end. And, all right, nothing else to say?
Nope, that's it.
All right, everyone. And in that case, we will see you next week.
Bye-nee.